Hey, this is the NYC Podcast. I'm Lindsay Lusher-Shute. Changing policy can seem like a daunting task for anyone, and especially if you farm full-time. But the farmers of our Central Minnesota chapter were able to get an important bill passed in less than a year. The law that they passed gives tax credits to landowners who rent or sell their land to beginning farmers. Today, I'm talking with Eric Sanarud, one of the chapter leaders who helped make it happen. He explains why they decided to tackle this issue in the first place and what made them successful.
Hi, I'm Norius Gorin, farmer at Urban Sprout Farms in Atlanta. I'm a member of the National Young Farmers Coalition because I like to have my voice heard, and I like the young farmers that are in our network and this food movement to have their voice heard. I also like to change the farm bill. In addition to being a part of a bright and just future for agriculture in the United States, you'll also get discounts like 10% off high-mowing organic seeds and 30% off red-bag boots. It pays for itself. To join, go to youngfarmers.org. Thanks.
Eric, where are you right now?
I'm in my office at the farm. We're in Foley, Minnesota.
First off, will you just tell me about your farm and what you're growing this season?
Yeah, we're growing hops. We always grow hops. We are a hop farm exclusively. We started 5 years ago at my family's farm. Ben and I and another friend in college founded it. And 3 years ago, we were able to secure an investor and expand our operations. So we bought more land, built all the equipment that you need to farm hops, and now we farm hops full time.
That's great. And how many is it? Do you still farm with business partners, or is it like a more family operation?
No, it's actually never been a family operation. We borrowed some land that was my grandparents lived on, but we didn't farm with anyone. It was Ben and I and this other friend from college, and now it's Ben and I who run the farm. We have three part-time employees in the summer, and we use the H-2A Ag Worker Visa program for spring and fall labor.
Oh, wow. Wow. And how many acres of hops do you have?
We have 82 acres of hops.
Wow. That's a lot of hops. How many pints of beer does that translate into?
I have no idea how many pints of beer that is. Is this year we're hoping for like 60,000 pounds because they're still maturing, but that's plenty of beer.
That's plenty of beer. So Eric, did you grow up on a farm?
I didn't. Like most young farmers, I think that, what is it? You'll know this better than me. Is it 75%?
75% of the farmers who took our survey did not grow up on farms. That's right.
Yep. So like them, I did not grow up on a farm. Neither did my business partner, actually. We both grew up in the suburbs. We went to a four-year college, public college, for a non-ag degree, and then ended up doing this.
And what inspired you to start Central Minnesota? How did your chapter come into being?
Well, you know, a couple of years after we first heard about it, I met up with another young farmer. His name is Matthew Fitzgerald. And we were talking about what we could do with our own time and effort to help Minnesota's agriculture get better. And one of those ways we can be better here in Minnesota is having more young people on the land, more new people entering agriculture as farmers. And we thought that starting a coalition chapter was a good opportunity for us to create space for other like-minded people to get together and try to do work together.
And were you two alone in that, or did you find that there were other young farmers also eager to create that space and come together?
It wasn't just us. No, we quickly had other people interested in what we were doing. We've had a really strong group of, I would say, 8 to 10 members who are part of what we call our Jedi Council, which is our leadership group. A lot of us are part of other organizations where we feel like our contributions and our energies are limited by like excessive bureaucracy and organization. And so we've really intentionally structured our group. It's myself, Matthew, and another farmer, Rachel Brand, who are the people who do the stuff that we do. And the Jedi Council informs those decisions and provides support to the things that we decide to do as a group, and are generally the people who show up to every single meeting or invite other friends to come.
Yeah. I love this idea of the Jedi Council. We've been trying to, you know, put NYFC, help NYFC chapters have sort of a more consistent, like, formula for leadership and so on, just to ensure transition and whatnot. And we never really had considered a Jedi Council. But
yeah.
I like that. I like that. Really smart, dedicated people.
Matthew's a pretty big Star Wars nerd, and it just helps us keep an understanding of, you know, what it is and why it's fun. And we have one working group that's survived longer than 2 months, and, you know, we're trying to do more than we have capacity for as a group, and so we naturally have to create these little committees and stuff like that that we all kind of hate.
Well, you guys had a huge success last year with the land bill. How did you arrive at tackling land access in the first place? Why was this something that you all wanted to work on, and why did you want to tackle policy?
It started with wanting to tackle policy. So when Matthew and I first met, we wrote this little, like, vision chart of where we were starting from and where we wanted to end up. And one of the things that we wanted to do in our first 2 years of existing was have a meaningful policy win. And we were open to what that looked like. I'd been following state policy and as it relates to young farmers for a couple of years, so I had some idea of the bills that would come up and go down and not get passed and that kind of thing. And it just so happened that the bill that we were targeting, which has been around for at least a decade at the Capitol, was introduced by a member of the House of Representatives ahead of us asking someone to introduce it. So there was someone else, there was a representative out there who wanted to make it law. And so, it was easy for us to select this bill, which happens to be a land access bill, because it was already there and already moving. I remember I had a couple policy classes in college, and, like, one of the ideas that was thrown around was, like, the idea of a policy window, which is when you, like, take the opportunity that's there instead of trying to create your own idea of a bill or your own idea of what solution to work towards. So we looked at what cards were on the table, and we picked one of those instead of trying to put our own card out there. That saved us a lot of work. We're in the process of trying to put our own card out there now, and boy, it's a much different process.
So tell me exactly what the bill now law does.
Yeah, the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit Law provides a tax incentive for existing landowners when they sell to a beginning farmer.
When they sell or rent their land to a beginning farmer.
Right. Yes. Sell or rent, or even cash rent. So there's an existing law like this, I think in Iowa, where there's an incentive to rent to a beginning farmer. But we felt like that wasn't the kind of level of structural systemic change that we wanted to get the opportunity to affect. And so it was very important that we included the sale of land in the tax credit, because that actually incentivizes someone to transition the direct ownership of land to the next generation versus rent out, which renting is an important step, but is often only applicable to certain types of farming and is something that isn't as impactful of actually transitioning ownership.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I often feel like I'm making the case that farmers need to own land, and they deserve to own land. I guess from your perspective, as a farmer and in Minnesota, why do you think that farmers need to own land?
Well, I think land ownership is about the security and the commitment to the work that we're doing, to the community, to the being the boots on the ground that create the values and create the world that we're looking to.
Yeah,
build.
I totally agree with you. It's like that, the long-term commitment and the community. It's, you need that security to really build something real. And we also hear a lot of stories from New York and beyond just about young farmers renting land and really being burned by bad relationships. And I'm just wondering, is that something that you've seen in Minnesota, or is it more just from this value perspective that farmers, this needs to be an option and we need to ensure this transition from one generation to the next.
Yeah, I've heard stories of folks who have really been burned by the rental relationship and, you know, folks who've been burned in trying to own land in unique ways, you know, with whether it's cooperative models or different ways of sharing ownership in a land, it can be very difficult. So, you know, actual transition of ownership keeps a lot of those things simple. And for us, like I said, is an important way of getting people onto the landscape.
So how did you guys go about passing this bill? So it had failed many times before, is my impression. Is that right?
Yeah, it had.
And what did you guys add? How did you change the trajectory for this piece of legislation?
I think the biggest thing that allowed us to finally get this bill passed into law was we are the group that's most affected by this law. And previously we hadn't been involved as directly or as clearly in advocating for it. There have been other groups pushing for this law for a long time. And while these groups do have young farmer membership and young farmer representation in the work that they do, they're not led by young farmers. Their sole purpose isn't young farmers. When these other groups go to the Capitol, they go there with this laundry list of policies and goals that run across the spectrum from, you know, anything from young farmer issues to renewable energy. And when we go there, we are just talking about young farmer issues. That was a very important strategic decision that we've made and we're continuing to stand with, and that what we advocate is for young farmers.
I totally agree, and that certainly has been the experience of Young Farmers Coalition broadly, certainly on the federal level too, bringing young farmers to the table to like advocate for what they need is so impactful. And I think the young farmers and their stories are so important, so lawmakers can just really understand in a kind of a simple way what is happening on the farm. And I guess just the experience of trying to be a young farmer in 2018, are there any other sort of like lessons learned just in terms of communicating to lawmakers that that you learned along the way, like how to change someone's mind or just get them interested in the first place?
Well, we're working with a law that many of them were already familiar with. I'm still not sure how this happened, but the majority party, one of their new representatives was the chief author, and so they had incentive to let him pass it so that he could show that he had accomplished something in his first session at the Capitol. That was not something we were able to organize, but was something that's very helpful for getting a law passed.
Mm.
And, you know, we tried to understand enough of the baseball that was going on so that we could talk to them in private and in public using words that they needed to hear to know that this was something they needed to pass. We selected members who had stories of corn and bean operations because that is more relatable and it is better understood by the members of our Ag Policy Committee than weirdos like me or members who are growing diversified veggies, because there's some perspective out there that diversified veggie growers, you know, well, that's cute, it's truck farming, you know, I'm farming. You know, so we got our members up there who were driving huge combines, you know, all in Minnesota, you know, all of September, October, November to get the harvest in, just like those guys are familiar with back in their home communities. So
yeah, was it difficult to get any of the young farmers? I mean, clearly Young Farmers Coalition are sort of core base at this point in time, are farmers that are doing diversified vegetable operations or hops, or you know sort of they're not doing large commodity operations at this point. I mean, there's many reasons for that, but I just wondered, was that bridge building easy or did you find any challenges there?
Well, both of our members who were testifying are organic row crop growers, but we tried to downplay that. They didn't introduce themselves to that necessarily. They just talked about growing corn and beans and what it was like being part of a family operation and not being part of a family operation and how hard it has been to enter that space for them. So we really tried to make it as least threatening to the ag powers that be as possible. And it really wasn't that hard. I mean, this law doesn't say you have to be going into sustainable agriculture production to benefit from the law. You could be buying acreage to do corn and beans. You could be buying acreage to put, you know, 10,000 pigs on an acre. It's the important thing is that you are a beginning farmer, regardless of what you farm. And so having a bill that we could shop and talk about as a win for all of agriculture, not just us weirdos who are advocating for it, was really important. And that allowed us to build stakeholders with organizations that have the weight necessary that basically tell the ag legislators if it's okay to vote for them or not. So the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau in our area were both signed on to this bill. They had both advocated for it in the past. And so their ability to say, you know, give a thumbs up to a representative staffer when the staffer says, hey, just met with these people today. What does a Farm Bureau think? Or what does a Farm Union think? And then those parties can say, we like it. Then the representative can go ahead and definitely vote for it because they got both the Farm Bureau and the Farm Union. And they got these cute little people, these young farmers that they can post about on their social media. Like, it's, I hope people don't feel like I'm sounding like cynical or Machiavellian. It's a good time to share that we do our best to understand, you know, how the game is played currently. And we aim to play that game to advance our issues and the issues that young farmers face in our state, because no one is playing the game effectively for us right now, or as effectively as we can. But we also acknowledge that the game stinks and is super dumb. And that if we would wish that in our lifetimes, we'd be part of change that allows the game to change.
To get the support of National Farmers Union and...
Minnesota Farmers Union, not national.
Minnesota Farmers Union. How did you gain their support?
Well, we have members who are members of our Young Farmers Coalition are members of both Farmers Union and Farm Bureau. And so we simply talk to our legislative representatives, the lobbyists for Farm Union and Farm Bureau, and said, hey, you know, you're familiar with this bill. We want to put a lot of energy and effort into actually getting it passed this time around. Will you help us? Or will you at least tell people that you're for it, even if you don't testify or you don't write letters, just make sure you're not in the way. Because if they were in the way, we would have had to fight tooth and nail.
Right. Yeah, we might not be having this conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
So who, if anyone, was against this bill? Was it merely needing to capture the attention and just put this as like a top priority, or was anyone actually working actively against passage?
I think once it became clear how much attention we were paying and that both Farm Union and Farm Bureau were down, that we were pretty set to have this pass into law. However, it was a budgeting year, and it was a question of how much money was going to be included. You know, it could have been passed and not funded, and they could have said, hey, we want to get the positive press, but we don't think you have enough followers to have anyone notice or care if we don't give you any money for it, right? There's all these different things that they can do. So we tried to keep the pressure up 100% as if it wasn't going to pass. So we had, we did our best to get earned media. We followed up on social media. And we had, I think, yeah, two call-in campaigns where we got many, many people to call in, to the point where the staffers on those committees were like, yeah, okay, yeah, I know what you're calling about. I'll mark you down.
Right. That's, yeah.
You have to give them the idea that someone's paying attention and people care about this, or they're going to figure out how to do the minimum possible. So I think without the grassroots support, which is a weird word, and I don't know a better word, but without the pressure that we were able to apply through our membership and through other young farmer supporters across the state of Minnesota, we probably wouldn't have gotten here. The biggest challenge that I was aware of, and there's probably other things that I don't know, you know, in this process, but there was some concern from one of the state departments, so one of the agencies, not an elected official, about the how complicated it would be to enforce, you know, to make the law real on the ground. And I heard that they were trying to figure out ways to kill the law, kill the bill, so that they didn't have to deal with it. But again, because of the public pressure and the attention that we were bringing to this issue and how much attention we were paying to the issue, you know, we didn't miss a single opportunity to testify on this, even though it was during the season. We have session that overlaps into our farming seasons. That was very important. So they never had the ability to, whether or not they wanted to show up and testify against or write letters against for testimony, because we were there and we would have seen that. And they knew that if we saw that, we would come after them. And I don't mean that as a threat, but just say like, hey, you know, organization Y says they don't want this bill and everyone else wants it. What's wrong with organization Y? And let's call them and let's talk to their bosses and
right.
let's go find out who in the agency is actually mad about this. And let's go talk to the governor's office and see if he still thinks it's a bad idea. You know, like
sure.
we try to have all of our ducks in a row. And by working with existing stakeholders like the Farm Union and Farm Bureau, we are able to know who's the person we have to talk to in the administration to let them know that we think something fishy is going on. And whether or not they want to tell us that they know, let them know that we know. And so they might want to stop doing the fishy thing, even if it's behind closed doors kind of stuff. Right. I mean, it's kind of crazy how deep it goes to do something that like is just like one of the simplest, most elegant solutions to land access that I've come across. Like, it's a very simple idea. It's very straightforward. Like, I don't know. And I probably sound like a crazy guy talking about like, you know, organization Y, and like, maybe I was just being, hyper-vigilant, but I think that was probably the largest threat that we had, and we saw it come up in a couple of odd ways that I haven't been able to confirm was because or not because of this one agency's purported... Yeah, I still don't know.
That happens all the time. It's hard to get agencies to do new things.
Yes.
I mean, we see this in the Farm Bill process now. Like, we're not seeing new ideas to address new challenges, right? But
right.
And I think that that's definitely true on the state level. It really requires an inspired and motivated Department of Agriculture to step up and change, because it requires change.
I should be really clear that I just realized now the Department of Agriculture was way on board. They supported us in every way that they could. So if we're looking at policy windows and we imagine all of the windows lining up, you know, we had a freshman legislator from the party in power that was there. We had the Farm Bureau and Farm Union were already familiar. The bill had been introduced and carried by members of the minority party in previous sessions. The Department of Agriculture was way on board. And even the governor's office was pretty interested. So that's a pretty straight shot to getting something passed and signed. And even with all of those things already in our favor, if you will, it was a pretty long, drawn-out process, and there were twists and turns, and you know, we ultimately weren't even in the Senate, our Senate's set of bills, omnibus bill, but we were in the House omnibus bill, so then it even went down to conference committee, and then it went down to the governor's signature or veto. And that whole process we had very little control over, because a good lesson was we got this thing passed. We got it out of all the committees. We got it put as close as we could to getting to a real vote on the floors and then to being a real bill that a governor could sign. And at a certain point, it was out of our control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned before that if someone had showed up to testify against it as a representative of an agency or something else, we would have had some levers to try to persuade them otherwise. But at a certain point, we're zoomed into some other larger omnibus bill, and we're a small, small fry. And all we're saying during that process to whoever will listen to us is, please don't forget about us. You know, leave us in there. It's
right.
a really great thing. You know, we don't care, you know, pass or not pass this thing, but let's make sure that our thing makes it through. And that's the time where having the support of other stakeholders and really having the back of your authors and your co-sponsors on the bill is really important. Like, whatever the reasons are that they're motivated to continue to fight for it all the way through that process, you need that, because you don't get that access.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You're totally at their mercy when it comes down to it, because that committee process,
mm-hmm.
what gets on the agenda, what gets through, it's not just the vote, right? It's like all the stuff that leads up to that actually makes a huge difference.
Yeah, basically, like, by the time the vote happens, you probably know whether or not it's going to pass, because the chair won't let it come to a vote unless it's going to be voted to the side that they want it to be voted to, because otherwise they look dumb.
So this bill, now law, has had some success already this year. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. The way the law works is when an existing landowner sells or rents to a beginning farmer, both parties apply to make sure that they're an existing landowner and that this person's a beginning farmer who's actually going to farm, and there's all sorts of da-da-da-da-da under that. Then it gets approved, and after that transaction is complete, the person who owns the land, who's either selling the land or who is renting the land, gets a tax break, a state income tax break on some percentage of that income. So there has been $1 million that have been approved to be reduced in income taxes based on rental and ownership applications to this program.
That's incredible. Do you know how many farms that is?
As of May 15th, there have been 162 approved applications for just under $1 million. So by now, 2 months later, we're recording this on July 10th, we're probably close to 200 approved applications and over $1 million in benefit. This is something that we're extremely happy and proud of. I think it's very validating for everyone who was fighting for this law over the last decade that this is a good idea and this is something that does work. It's clearly had a large impact. There are land access programs that the state has been participating in for almost longer than 10 years that do not have 162 approved applications and have 162 matches of people to land.
That's incredible.
This is insane. I mean, it's 162 beginning farmers, because they have to be beginning farmers, who have access to either more land through rental agreements, who have now transitioned to owning some land through a purchase agreement, that they would not have done as easily without this law. And it's 162-ish landowners who are being rewarded for doing what we want them to do as a state and transitioning that land to the next generation versus transitioning it to houses or transitioning it to just renting out to the big guy next door. This is the change. This is a systemic change happening. And it's not that flashy. Like, those are kind of cool numbers. But it's like, this is the kind of law that does it.
Yeah, it's so exciting. You're absolutely right. You see these land linking programs that are set up by states that are trying to have experienced farmers, retiring farmers, sell to the next generation. And you're right, they're like underutilized, or they're not working as they should. But here is this law that like really provides some like dollar incentive to make this happen, and it seems like it's unlocked so many possibilities there. That's really exciting. Congratulations to you guys. So you guys have had such incredible success in your first year, last year, in getting a bill passed. What is next on the agenda for Central Minnesota Young Farmers Coalition?
This coming session, we're hoping to bring a workforce development bill to the table and start to get people interested in that and gather feedback and interest level. Something similar to what the Young Farmers Coalition in Colorado was able to pass. So we're looking to develop some sort of cost share program that enables people who are serious about getting the skills to go into farming as a career, easier access to the experiential learning that's required to become a farmer, as well as support those existing farms in connecting with workers, people who want to learn. We think this is something that, again, looking, you know, through our view, is a win for wherever you are in agriculture. And it'll be very important to us that this bill isn't just something that would benefit diversified vegetable growers or hop farmers, but is something that a dairy farmer could see themselves in, or a turkey grower. And while we have programs like this that support people to get into carpentry or get into pipe fitting or whatever that trade might be, we don't have something like that for farming in Minnesota. And farming is at least as important as any of these other trades for the health of our rural communities, for the economic vitality of our state, for jobs, whatever you want to call it. Farming is important too.
That's great. So what would you, if you were to give some advice to another young farmer looking to change state policy, what would you say?
I don't know what to say. It's crazy and it's complicated. And I think it behooves you to work on something that you're truly passionate about, because you're never going to get it right away. It's probably not going to work out right away. You probably have a lot of things that you need to learn. But if you really care, like we did, that this bill becomes law, it'll be obvious to everyone you talk to about it. You'll have people helping you because they see your passion. And regardless of the outcome, you can feel empowered and you can feel motivated because you know how much it matters. So if you can fight to the teeth for something that doesn't end up happening and still feel good about it, that's the right issue for you.
That's great advice, Eric. I totally agree. This issue even had been going on for years. And, when a new issue comes into play that lawmakers are not familiar with it, it can take a really long time to gain people's interest and get them to understand. Passion is really incredibly important. And you guys clearly have used that and had a great success in Minnesota. That's so exciting. I just wanted to, end on one thing. Do you think it's possible to be a young farmer in Minnesota these days? What is your outlook on starting a farm in your town and in Minnesota broadly? What is it like getting started?
Yes, I would say that it's a good time to get into farming. I think it's something that if you're passionate about it, you should get into farming. I think that Minnesota is a great place for that. I think that central Minnesota in particular is a really good space for young farmers to get their start, because the land isn't too terribly expensive. It's also not too crappy. And you're relatively close to some pretty major markets to sell your crop at. So I think we're in a good spot. I think it's actually an economic development opportunity for this region to frame themselves as a space for entrepreneurial farming for new farmers to get involved.
Great. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on the work of Central Minnesota Young Farmers Coalition. And I hope you will update us as this next campaign gets started.
I certainly will. We'll keep you in the loop. Thanks so much for talking today.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Next week, I'll be talking with Iris Figueroa of Farmworker Justice about immigration and farm workers. Please subscribe to the show, and if you have time to rate, review us on iTunes. It really does help other people find us. Thank you to everyone who worked on this. Hannah Beal for editing, Eric Santarude for taking time off the farm, and thank you for listening.